Welcome to the post-pod Sif spoil on Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. We're going to
clunky title.
Talk about the hanging threads, romances, jokes, Easter eggs, cameos, deaths, resurrections, and post-credit sequences.
They all die.
A little bit of all of that, I think.
Yeah.
I think a little bit of all of that.
From Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Where do you guys want to start? I think my favorite surprise in the movie was Ben Kingsley.
Trevor Slattery.
Sure.
Yeah.
Trevor Slattery.
Having Trevor show up.
Now, Andrew, you said you didn't like some of the cameos. Was this one of the ones you were referring to?
No. I was more talking about Wong and the Abomination shooed in at the
It was definitely shoehorned.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, there's a moment early in the movie where Benedict Wong just shows up almost entirely for fan service. And it's like, hey, what other Asians do we have in the MCU? Oh, yeah, Benedict, come over here. We need you for a half-day shoot.
Yeah. I did feel like it's cool that they're putting Wong kind of front and center on the Doctor Strange thing, and I wonder if Strange is like already doing Multiverse of Madness stuff, and so he's not available.
Where does this take place directly in mm-hmm. the timeline?
Yeah, that kind of
Someone in the comments of our live show asked or posited that perhaps Shang-Chi takes place during the blip, and I don't know that I got that sense.
No, because didn't you say that it was like you saw the lines or the message board saying, are you having PTSD about the blip and stuff, has to take place afterwards.
But I was going to say, but the end credit scene makes it clear when it takes place.
Mm-hmm.
Or it kind of does. Should we talk about the end credit scene? Do we want to talk about some other stuff first?
Okay.
About Trevor, but we're just jumping all over the place.
Let's go back. I'm sorry.
Yeah, let's talk about Trevor.
Brand.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. I found using him as a way both to kind of apologize in some ways for...
Yeah, there was kind of like a retcon. They mm-hmm. rectified a little mistake they made with the Mandarin beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they kind of pissed off a lot of fans with Iron Man 3's reveal that he was not the real Mandarin.
Yep.
So this movie kind of retcons some of those decisions and makes them work into this one.
Yeah.
In a way that...
And it makes his comic relief makes him the butt of the joke, and he's so good at that.
The Planet of the Apes bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an extended like 45 second joke.
Horses.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I missed. Yeah. I love Trevor. And if you love Trevor, then you would really love watching All Hail the King.
Yeah.
It's I didn't know that existed until after I got out of the theater and I saw somebody else mention it in one of their reviews. And I was like, well, I got to check out. I had heard about the Marvel one shots, these short, like 10 minute films. They made five of them between 2012 and 2014. Yeah. But I honestly had never checked any of them out, so I'm going to watch some of those this week for sure.
I forget the name of the Agent Coulson one, but that one is also really, really good. Yeah. But talking about Trevor, you know, it was fun because I think they really do realize that in Iron Man 3 they kind of screwed the pooch with the whole, he's not the real Mandarin, or that the Mandarin's not a real character, you know? That mm-hmm. And they're like, oh yeah, we kind of missed the boat on that one, but this is a good way to retcon, like Aaron said, and to say, nope, we're gonna do the Mandarin right. And oh man, did Tony do him right? He's so good.
Oh, he was fantastic.
He's so
I know we
good.
Mentioned it, but the best actor in this movie by a country mile.
It's because
he brought
he's,
so much to
when
it.
He that old guy and he's like young man, you know. He's like, I've lived tens of your entire lifetimes.
I've lived 10 of your lifetimes, and the translation in Mandarin is something closer to, I've eaten as much salt as you've had meals, and there's something. And then he drops the young man at the end of it, like, oh, that's. And the guy he's talking to is physically
old.
So much older. Yeah. Tony Young is an actor. He's probably what, in his early 40s or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, the way he drops that is just, there's so much disdain and disrespect for it that he's a great villain in this.
So the
for
other
sure.
Go ahead. Aaron.
No, because I'm changing the subject. So if you've got more on that.
Well, it was just his stoicism throughout the entire movie. Like you mm-hmm. barely see, and I don't know if that's more like an Eastern thing, you know, the lack of showing emotion and stuff like that. But there was like, he has seen everything because he's lived for so long, you know, that he doesn't get fazed as easily by things. But like whenever he starts hearing the voice of his wife, you know, that's whenever you're like, oh, this man does still emote emotion and stuff. And he's like going there. And that's what's so heartbreaking about his character is the pain of like the one thing that he truly felt love and passion for in his 1,000 years of life was taken from him, and there's possibly a way to get her back, and that is where we're going to see the emotion from him. That is such an amazing and profound story arc for a villain. As opposed to Ronan, like, I don't like that, I'm going to kill him. He's the one I always come back to neg on, but, you know, it's for a good reason. He's the worst MCU villain.
Yeah. The other thing you mentioned, I have some questions on. I'm assuming Abomination is the big lizard creature that Wong is fighting in the, is what you're talking about. Am I supposed to know that creature from something else? Miss something?
He's who the Edward Norton Hulk movie.
Okay.
That's who he fought.
Okay. Oh. It has been a while, man.
That was the main big bad at the end of The Incredible Hulk, where he's fighting in Harlem.
Yeah.
And the Hulk is just punching like a white Hulk.
Yeah.
Just like another big white monster.
So
I didn't recognize that was the same character at all.
It's because like we're supposed to believe that character has continued to evolve and change into something, and that's who he is now.
Yeah, and also it's been like 14 years since that movie came out.
Yes, now he has like thin ears and stuff like that.
This has to be a reference. And I didn't know if it was a reference from the cinematic universe or a reference from the comic books, but all of a sudden I felt like I was in a Venom movie or something. Or
They definitely changed his physical appearance from the Edward Norton movie to here. He looks a lot more like he does in the comics.
Okay.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
A quick correction, Tony Leung is actually 59 years old.
Wow.
He looks incredible. Yeah. I thought he was like your age, Aaron, no offense. he is much older, and clearly he does calisthenics or something. He looks great.
Yeah.
Quick correction there.
So it's interesting you thought he was like 35. You had mentioned Abomination. I did want to clear that up because I was kind of confused about that.
Yeah.
And then we can go into the post-credit scene since we were, you know, kind of itching to get there. But this brings Wong back. He comes and interrupts their dinner at the end of the movie, right? And says, hey, come with me.
And this is literally like Benedict Wong from Doctor Strange holding out his hand to the new cast saying, come with me, I'm going to bring you into the MCU. It's like a very literal... like passing torch, like
Banner.
We are inviting you. You are in the team now.
Banner says, "Welcome to the circus," and you're just like, you know, yeah. Ooh.
So can we talk about the fact that Bruce Banner was in human form?
Yes.
I don't know what that means. He has the sling on. His arm is in a sling, which means this is post snap. His arm is still reeling from using the gauntlet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he looks like Mark Ruffalo, not a big green rage monster.
I think his arm will always be in, like, I think it permanently damaged his arm. Yeah. So I don't know.
That would be a really interesting character choice going forward.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be nice if they actually had some stakes and consequences in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a great reminder in the next movie down the line. I think he's going to be in Thor 4 that, like, hey, he did a thing and sacrificed his right arm to save, you know,
but
mankind
this is,
or whatever.
This is
something that the Hulk can't. Oh, go ahead.
No. I'm just saying this is why I feel like there's going to be some reveal down the line about where this movie takes place in the timeline that may be a bit of a surprise. Because Banner is human and Brie Larson doesn't have her short hair either from the end of Endgame. So, so it's interesting.
Yeah.
I was very confused by both of those sort of aesthetic choices. Okay, Brie has long hair and Mark is human. But the scene at the end of Shang-Chi made it sound like Shang and Katie are talking to their friends in the bar, ostensibly like a week or two after this happened. They're they're regaling them with their tales of victory, again, seemingly right after it happened. And then Wong pulls them through the little sling portal. And I assume this is like right after it happened. So this is within a few months of Endgame, I think. Or does this take place way, way, way after? I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it has to take place way after. I think it has to take for her hair and stuff, because if his arm is burnt, that's post snap, and then her hair growing long enough to where it's noticeable.
I think Aaron's theory is the only one that holds credence. Is it not only is it it has to be many years post snap, possibly, or a year, or her hair has grown out, but. His arm is permanently in a sling now. I assumed if his arm is in a sling, it's the same week. It like just happened. But you could be right that he could just permanently have a bum arm.
Yeah. I think it damaged his arm permanently. is probably what we're going with there.
Which is pretty interesting that the Hulk can't heal from something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, that post-credit scene definitely opened up some ideas. And then, yes, deal with the beacon. What is calling from this ancient technology and who is it calling? Right?
It's exciting to not have any idea. It's exciting to not have any idea.
Yeah.
For the first time.
It's calling the next movie. It's probably, it might be setting up Eternals or Multiverse.
I think it's Eternals. I think it's setting something Eternals up, but I don't know.
Oh, that the Eternals were the initial creators of the Rings.
That it's been around for millennium, I think that sort of ties into it. Yeah. And they specifically said it's not alien, so it might be like a domestic thing that goes back thousands of years. So that might be a.
Well, yeah, because the Eternals have been on Earth for very, very, very long time. So
I'm thinking that's kind of what it'll play into. Or not. Like, we've seen Marvel set up stuff and then not pay it off for four or five movies, just forget about things entirely, or just it's just a joke. Like, who knows?
Yeah.
And then that was the mid-credit scene. Correct. There's also an end-credit scene where Shang-Chi's sister ostensibly takes over as the leader of the Ten Rings. For good or for bad, we don't really know yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the most important moment of the entire movie is whenever Wong and Awkwafina and Shang-Chi go karaoke.
That in Hotel moment California. Was great. I just saw the Eagles live in concert last week.
They're so good, aren't they?
They were I don't know why I was surprised. They've sold like 400 million records, and I've loved the Eagles my whole life, but I had never been able to afford them because it's a very expensive show. Mm. And I got a good deal. I went to see it with my friend last week in the Boston Garden. And we were both like, oh my gosh, they sound phenomenal. Don Henley's like 75 years old, and they sound so good. And it was just – so Hotel California has just kind of been stuck in my head all week anyway.
Yeah.
And to have that be the button on the whole movie was like, this was – that was fun. That was good.
Yeah.
Whenever really fun whenever moment. Awkwafina is singing that to the assassin on the bamboo –
on a dark desert highway. And it's just so off key.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was really
like,
fun.
What? Like, it works. I guess it works. She's right.
Anything else? Any other specifics now that you're free to talk about? Anything that you wanted to talk about? You know, we've got the moving tree maze was pretty cool. You know, there's a lot of cool visual stuff like that.
So one thing I want to talk about real quick is that
I didn't care for the big dragons at the end, if I'm honest.
That's what I'm going with. I thought that the movie was doing a good enough job setting up the fact that the Mandarin was going to be, you know, the big bad and that there was going to be an emotional tie-in. But then for them to do it's a big dragon now. I will say that the area, I forget what it was, the village in like the realm or whatever that they went to was gorgeous and beautiful, and I love the visual representation of those the creatures and stuff like that, like the phoenix or the nine-tailed foxes, or those interesting horse-whiskered things.
I call that the Pokemon section of the
Pokemon section.
That was kind of fun. I liked
it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, but whenever it came to like the creatures making the soul sucking creatures and stuff, I'm like, you kind of halfway.
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. Like you halfway.
I mean, it's just shrapnel.
Thought out this villain.
There's nothing. You know, substantial about it.
There's a moment.
But the protector dragon fighting that evil dragon, that was cool.
I liked that.
Yeah, a bit of like a kaiju. Kind of a Godzilla-esque, like the big monster versus the big monster.
In some of the visuals in that scene were crazy good. And I know there was a lot going on at times, especially with the smaller creatures. But as far as the big creatures and some of that fight and some of what Shang-Chi was doing during that, where it was really cool, really interesting.
Visually, I think it looked good, but I was also – it was hard to follow, like geographically and spatially, what was happening. Who was wrapped around what? There's two dragons. They're kind of almost the same shade. And then there's water, which has another. Everything's sort of like white, gray, black. And it was like, where is things happening?
I thought the dragon distinction was pretty easy. You know, one of them was almost
the water
white.
Was what threw me. As soon as the water came up, I was kind of like, who's wrapped around what now? And is the water on – whose side is the water on? I think, like you said, Aaron, I would like to rewatch this on like a big screen at home.
Yes.
So I can kind of like maybe slow it down a little bit.
It maybe like music is like this sometimes, right? The first time you hear a song with a lot of moving instruments and parts, it's overwhelming. And then as you listen more,
you can pick out the harmonies.
You pick out the harmonies and the different things, and it all starts to make sense. I wonder if maybe some of these action scenes will like get better over time as you kind of are subconsciously aware of what's going on and able to piece it together more.
That's been the case. I've definitely seen some scenes where initially I was like, this is a haphazard mess that's just been cut all over the place. A lot of Quantum of Solace comes to mind as being badly edited.
Yeah.
But when you watch it on home media, when the screen's a little smaller and your periphery's not being barraged with images, you can kind of focus. And the quick pacing doesn't matter as much. But I remember when I initially saw movies like that in the end of Shang-Chi, I'm like, I can't follow what's happening. I know there's good dragon, bad dragon, and I know the good dragon's probably winning, but I can't really tell. If you paused the frame, I'd be like, I don't know what I'm looking at.
How do we?
But there was one moment at the very end of that fight where Shang-Chi is like hovering above the dragons, and I think he's in mid free fall.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, I'm going, wait, can he fly? I don't understand the power of the rings.
Oh, I wanted to talk about this because I loved this. I love that he uses the rings as propulsion, and I thought the physics of it were really interesting to me. So he uses the you know, every action like has an equal and opposite reaction. Yeah, to be able to do that. It allows him to slow down, like when he lands. It allows him to launch, to, you know, jump really high in the air. I really enjoyed the idea of the rings as a propulsion unit. I thought it made a lot of sense and was interesting to me. So I think when he's falling there, yes,
he's just holding himself up like Iron Man.
Well, he's using the rings to, you know, generate backwards force.
But he also, at the end of the movie, don't forget, he learned from Michelle Yeoh how to harness the power of the elements,
the wind,
so the water around him and stuff like, and the wind.
Like I said, it's my Airbender movie. It's my last Airbender movie.
Yeah.
But there was definitely a moment where I'm like, oh, he can fly now? Okay. I accepted it, but I was like, I haven't seen anyone do this yet. So it came as a bit of a surprise.
We kind of saw his mom do it a little bit when she could control the elements. In that first,
she did a little of like that wire walkie like stuff.
Yeah, I think that's
but to just levitate
version.
Straight in the air, I was like, oh, okay. This again, I understood, but I was surprised by like, oh, okay, cool. He can do that too.
How do we feel about the KDX Machina arrow? How do we feel about you know?
It felt a little sloppy.
It did to me
a little
too.
Rushed.
Like, yeah, well, like we have to have something for this character to do. Let's train her in the last act to shoot arrows. And
I had this thought where I think it would have been really super easy, barely an inconvenience, to have Katie in a flashback or something earlier in the movie, just mention. Like with her mom, like, oh, you're a valet driver now? What happened to the archery range? What happened? Like, just have a quick line that sets up she used to be on like track and field. She used to be in archery. Yeah. And I think very easily you could have planted a seed that said she's good with bow and arrow. She used to compete in high
just
school.
Just have a
– and she gave that up too.
Just have a Chekhov's arrow on her wall or something, you know, just something that, you know, is going to come back later and give us something. But yeah, it just felt a little – weird and rushed and convenient. So,
I got a question, and this is more for like Marvel Universe that I'm not familiar with, because I'm definitely not familiar with Shang-Chi at all. He's a very, you know, unknown character before this movie. But you remember Iron Fist? He was the protector of some realm, and it was a realm with a dragon. And
you're talking from the Netflix show?
Yeah, from the Netflix show, or just the Iron Fist character in general.
Okay.
I wonder if like he is related in any way to like this this realm that they go and visit. Like if he was the protector.
No idea. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I kind of felt like it's you know, I wonder if I forget the name of their hidden city.
Lopau.
Something like that.
Yeah. I just wonder if
I almost said Lomain, but I'm not gonna.
No.
Lomain.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It's not Lomain. So.
I wonder if Lopau and Wakanda like know of each other. You know, they're kind of.
I got a very. very when similar. I got home, my wife asked me how the movie was, and I was like, "It had a very Wakanda vibe at the end."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
For better or worse.
Because they can walk on the air. Sorry. That was really bad. Really, really bad.
You had to get one dad joke in a day, I guess.
Anything else you guys wanted to mention from the movie? Now that we're in spoiler filled territory.
I don't think so. I wish they used more of San Francisco to tie it in with. I was expecting like an Ant-Man cameo at some point because he's in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I wasn't disappointed, but if anybody was to show up, I thought maybe we'd get a little crossover there. But other than that, I thought they played things pretty close to the chest in regards to like Marvel tie-in. They saved the biggest stuff for the end credits. And I kind of liked that for the most part, outside of Benedict Wong's cameo, it was kind of – they stood alone with its own origin story. And they didn't felt compelled to just needlessly tie every character back in. And I liked that. I liked that it was a proper standalone movie for a majority of it. And you could – this could be the first Marvel movie you ever watch and you would enjoy it plenty and not really need any other context.
I think you're right.
And there's not a lot of Marvel movies where you can do that anymore.
Let's see. Some stuff
– go in first.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Some things we haven't talked about. The Mandarin character sacrificing himself at the end. Do we think he's dead? Do we think he's coming back?
I think he's dead.
I think so,
Daddy McDeadface.
I think by and large, Marvel usually kills off their villains for good. We have not seen too many resurrections.
It's the heroes that come back all the time.
Yeah.
The heroes come back, and the side characters like Ben Kingsley. Like, we thought his story was wrapped, but, you know, he came back.
And then the other thing was, you had mentioned in the podcast proper, Andrew, about kind of the Katie Shang-Chi relationship. I wanted to mention
a will they won't they sort of thing.
If there's a will they won't they, it's very light, and it's pretty much all from the grandmother just saying that, you know, thing about when are you guys getting married.
I like that it was super platonic.
It was, and it ended super platonic as well. There was never like a big hey are we something kind of moment. Like, it was just
I appreciate they don't feel compelled to just shoehorn in another romance plot.
If it happens, because, it'll happen later, you know, whatever.
You're the only other attractive woman in the movie, so I guess we're together now. Like, no, that's lazy. Yeah. Develop it.
Yeah.
Develop it, for real.
Yeah, so I did want to mention in spoilers that I did appreciate how that stayed consistent all the way through. She didn't just say, now we're just friends, and then they had that like moment where they pause and they're staring at each other and there's this something between them, and it's just like, no, they were just friends for this movie. And that's, they walk into, you know, Wong's, you know, palace or whatever, and as friends. I like that quite a bit.
One final thing I wanted to address. I forgot this, and it's the kind of thing that only Wikipedia will have reminded you of. Michelle Yeoh has already been in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as a different character.
Oh.
When she cameoed as Aletta Orgud in the second Guardians of the Galaxy. No, she was one of the ship captains that was at Yondu's funeral. She shows up alongside Sylvester Stallone and a couple other like one scene cameos.
Right.
And she's in it. She's in that scene briefly on camera as a human that looks exactly like Michelle Yeoh. That was only 4 years ago. So now it's, hey, there's also a human that looks exactly like her that lives in a mythical kingdom.
It's the same person. We can make it work. Yeah. We can make it work.
It doesn't. And like, I they're named different. They have different character names, but.
But that's just who she plays when she needs to go accomplish certain things in the galaxy.
Until we hear it from Feige himself, we're going to assume this is one of the first examples of Marvel accepting you can play two different characters. And I think Josh Brolin might be the second. Yeah. If they accept Deadpool into canon, then he is Cable and Thanos, and I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
Recast if you want. I don't care. Nobody even noticed. Like, I didn't notice it. Has she been in this franchise? I don't know. Probably.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yep. It reminds me of Doctor Who. One of the companions had a small part in one of the previous episodes in Doctor Who, and then became like a main companion. It's just kind of that, like, oh, well, I guess that's just the thing now.
Yep.
You just have to accept it. There's going to be mistakes. There's a line in Endgame where Tony jokingly refers to Thor as the Big Lebowski, starring Jeff Bridges,
Iron Man.
It's like there's a lot of that, like, all right, well, what just happened? You're breaking your universe on me.
Or Sebastian Stan whenever they mention Hot Tub Time Machine
In WandaVision when they have The Incredibles as one of the movies that's playing at the local theater. You know, it's just like, who plays Frozone in that movie?
I choose to prescribe to the last action hero theory, which is within those universes, those movies exist, but they star different actors in the exact same role. Mm-hmm. There's a beat where they go to the movie store and there's a poster for Terminator 2, but it's Sylvester on the bike instead of Schwarzenegger. Because in that universe, Schwarzenegger doesn't exist, so it went to Stallone.
I literally just rewatched Last Action Hero a week or so ago.
So good. Love that film.
Nice. It's good.
Well, there you go. There's the spoilers for Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Appreciate you hanging out with us, and we'll be back next time we need to spoil something. See ya.
Yep. Bye.